All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, Week 18 edition of the show. I am Bobby Fenton, and we are set to wrap up the regular season on Sunday afternoon. Bucks at the Falcons, 1 p.m. Of course, given what happened this past weekend, now we've got our eyes a little bit further ahead as the Buccaneers are the NFC South champions. They will host a wild card game the following week, and it could be Monday night. I shouldn't say the following weekend because they've got the Monday night one now. We don't know yet what it'll be. We know it'll be against either the Cowboys or the Eagles, and we know, most importantly, it will be at Raymond James Stadium. And it's a big deal. I mean, we've talked all year about how the Bucs have been disappointing. They were even disappointing on Sunday when they won the division. But, you know, there have been 101 seasons of sports amongst our three major pro sports teams with the Buccaneers and then the Lightning and then the Rays. The Bucs won their eighth division title on this past Sunday. The Lightning have won four, and none of them were in the seasons they won the Stanley Cup recently. They did win the division in the 2004 season, and the Rays have won four. So at 101 total seasons, okay, the Bucks, Lightning, and Rays combined, this is the 16th time. So we're talking about less than 16% of the time something like this happens. So even if it does happen when you're 8-8, and maybe 9-8 or 8-9, we'll see what happens against the Falcons. But even when it happens that way, even when you don't have the highest rate of confidence, it's still a big deal. And as someone who grew up here and as someone who watched all three of our teams struggle for very long periods of times in the early years of the franchises, to see any of them do this and to see the Bucks do it on Sunday is really cool. And I'm already excited for the playoff game. I know what I've already said. I've said all this negative stuff. I've got more negative stuff today, I'm going to say. And we'll get to all of that coming up on the show. We're going to look back at the game against Carolina. We're going to look ahead to Atlanta and, of course, even a little bit to the playoff game. First things first, though, obviously, and by the time you hear this, there may have even been more news, but the most recent news is I record this on Thursday night with Damar Hamlin, the Buffalo Bills safety, who is still in the hospital in Cincinnati but is doing very well considering the circumstances. Some of the quotes coming out were neurologically intact, which was obviously the biggest one because that's what you're worried about. He had a remarkable recovery, they were saying. He's got a long way to go, but all signs are highly optimistic. And everybody who was watching Monday Night Football or saw the highlights later, you know, by now you've heard everything. You don't need any more hot takes and things like that. But it's a huge relief to see that he's doing well. And, you know, that's going to be a long process that runs throughout the whole offseason and maybe longer. There have been questions already. Oh, is he going to be able to play again? And the doctors are saying, you know, don't worry about that right now. Just one step at a time. And so it's really good to see that he's doing well. It's, you know, got me thinking about how just how many guys are out there on the field in any given week. I mean, obviously there's 22 at a time on any play, but there's all these guys, and there's players in the league of varying levels and varying, you know, levels of recognition too. And they've all got stories. My coach in high school, Dom Sio, who's still coaching at Berkeley Prep, but he used to say that. He said, everybody's got a story. And a lot of times it's kind of unfortunate, but until something bad happens, you don't really know their story. So hearing about this guy, I didn't know a lot about Damar Hamlin and the charity work he does and you know, the toy program he was doing for Christmas and things like that. And a lot of these guys do stuff like that. And we have no idea. Like I said, you only heard about this one because of the unfortunate incident that happened. But it was cool to see. I mean, they've got his foundation now, which had like a few thousand dollars, I think, in it before all this. And it's over $7 million now. People around the country have been donating and doing things like that. So stuff like that is really cool. Obviously, you'd rather it not have happened at all, of course. But if something like this is going to happen, to see other things like that that are good come out of it are good. And to hear that he's doing better is obviously a huge sigh of relief for everybody. And, you know, right when it happened Monday night, everybody was getting all over the NFL about, oh, I can't believe that they got to cancel this game. What are they doing? And, time felt like he was standing still at first when it first happened because nobody had any idea. And everybody saw what happened on the field. They're giving the guy CPR. They've got the AED out. I mean, you know, stuff that we – there's been a few times that CPR has even been given on the field. And I couldn't even remember the last one. And that's – it's only a handful. And then the AED, I'm not sure that's happened in an NFL game or not. But either way – like, at that point Monday night, everything was like, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I think the NFL did a pretty decent job. I mean, you have to understand, and the decision to cancel the game was not, to me, a hard one. I'm sure the NFL made that decision a lot sooner than we heard about it. But everybody on Twitter is going on and on. Oh, my God, I can't believe they haven't canceled the game yet. It's not a small thing to cancel a game. And I'm not saying the decision kind of was a small thing. That was easy to do. But even if deciding to cancel a game is step one, when you actually have Joe Buck go on ESPN and say the NFL is announcing they've canceled the game, that's like step 47. You know, like there's things that have to be done. It's a big deal. Like, and so I think the league handled it pretty well. And this whole week now has been about what are they going to do with the game. And again, you've probably already heard, but they're not making up the game. They are going to worry about the playoff seeding depending on what happens this weekend. And in the event that that game would have mattered, and it's possible to factor into a couple things, the AFC North, the AFC number one seed, all that stuff, they're going to play the game at a neutral site if it involves, like, if there's any way that that game that didn't get played ends up affecting what could possibly have been the number one seed, even if the Chiefs have a better winning percentage, they're playing Chiefs versus Bills or whatever, they're playing at a neutral site. So we'll see if that even comes to pass. It may not come to pass. But that's not the important thing. The important thing is DeMar Hamlin's health. And it does sound, by all accounts, like it's getting better. And it got me thinking, which I've thought about this many times before, but it got me thinking about football and all the people that come out of the woodwork anytime something like this happens. And on Twitter, you know, there's all the people I follow. Not all the people, but most of them are sports-oriented. But I follow a lot of other people, too. I follow some political people and things like that. And so many of the non-football people were coming out, I can't believe we're still in the year 2023. We still have grown men doing this for sport and entertainment. This is ridiculous. And how can anybody let their kids play football and on and on and on? You know, and it's not, I'm not criticizing them. It's totally understandable to feel that way. Like, that's a perfectly valid opinion and a perfectly valid stance. But, you know, these things happen and there's a little bit of shock at first. And then there hasn't been any football yet since what happened on Monday night. There isn't a Thursday night game this week or anything. On Sunday, they'll roll out the 16 games. And, you know, yeah, there's going to be some tributes and things like that at the beginning of all the games around the league. You know, league-wide, they'll do stuff like that. First couple plays might be a little bit, like, weird, and I guarantee you after that, it'll feel just like any other football. And, you know, I played football growing up, starting in eighth grade, through high school, like most people did. Like, there's millions of people walking around today, guys who played high school football, and that was it. And they're fine. And I know that's anecdotal evidence. I know that's not, like, scientifically based, but I've never thought, like, the idea of simply playing football, even with all the stuff we know now with CTE, and ironically what happened to DeMar Hamlin, and they haven't given the official diagnosis, but what happened to him is something you see more often in baseball and other projectile type sports where, like, a ball or something hits you in the chest. In this case, it happened in football. But the point of it is, I know this. I got a neighbor and I got a couple friends who played for the South Tampa Titans. This is in South Tampa, okay? So this isn't like the inner city or something. And that team had a wait list at all the age groups to get on the team. Plant High School, which is down the street from where I live, had 90 kids out for JV football, okay? Semi-pro football, which I haven't played in a few years, but if you've listened to this show, you know I've played that. That's not even like, hey, maybe I have a future in this sport. That's grown men paying money with no hope of anything except, hey, I want to play football. The team I used to play on, now the Tarpon Springs Pirates, they got like 70 guys on the team for the coming season, okay? So you hear all these things, all the death of football and the game's not going to survive. There are more people trying to play football, at least in my anecdotal little world. And I know the number, there's numbers and stuff, but it's crazy. Like, people want to play football right and left. I look at my own son. He's starting flag football. That's different. But I'm thinking about, like, down the road to high school and stuff. And if he wanted to play, and I'm not going to press him to play or not play or anything like that, but if he wanted to play, I'd be absolutely elated. And the only reason I'm not still playing semi-pro football is because I'm too busy doing stuff with my family and the team's too far away, or my ass would still be out there right now. And I think a lot of you guys out there listening, and this is having seen what I saw Monday night, knowing full well, if the Bucks called me on the phone today and said, hey, we're going to pay you $15,000 a year, need you to come out and suit up, need you on Sunday against the Falcons. Are you kidding me? What, like right now at 42 years old, my ass would be at one Buck place tonight getting ready for Sunday. I'd be so excited. I'd probably pay them. It's like the Andrew Brand. He used to be working the Packers front office. I follow him on Twitter, and he always tells a story every year after the draft, like these guys that are the undrafted free agents, and he signed one of them. And they brought him into like the offices at Lambeau Field, and they're just going over the basic structure. It was like a training camp. He wasn't even a drafty; he was like a free agent. And they're like, "Okay, it's $5,000, through camp, and then if you make the team, we go from there." And the player was like, "Okay, well, I can get you 2,500 like tomorrow, but then can you give me a few days for the other 2,500?" And Brandt's like, "No. We pay you. You play for us." And like it's true though. Like I'd pay them. I would pay them for the chance to go out there and take those risks. And I know a lot of guys feel that way too. And I'm not saying anybody's wrong for not feeling that way, but I don't buy into the whole death of football thing. And even when you see these incredibly sobering things happen, and I mean, it could very, very easily have been much, much worse. It really could have been. I don't know. I don't feel like the game of football is gonna change. And they've tried to make safety, adjustments and things like that. And this wasn't actually a case of anything like targeting, but when you complain about the targeting rules and people say, "Oh my God, this is so stupid, I can't believe," that's what they're afraid of. Like I said, I know this play in particular was not actually a targeting thing, but the overall point still exists. Like, same with the roughing the passer stuff with the quarterbacks, which is out of control. I agree, it's ridiculous, but still, like, there's a reason they're doing these types of things. It's because they've got to do something to rein in the sheer absolute violence of football, and there's certain amounts of violence that are just baked into it. But there's a lot of gratuitous violence too. That there's ways to get guys to the ground they could probably use other than just literally launching themselves into them like a missile. And I'm not, I know that didn't happen on Monday, but my point is the reasons for these rules make sense to me, even though I don't always like them, and even though I get annoyed at targeting calls just like everybody else, and I get annoyed with roughing the passer calls just like everybody else. And I remember when I used to do my radio show with Scott Brantley, who used to play linebacker for the Gators and the Bucks, and he told the story, and you could go on YouTube and look at the Eric Hipple hit. It's one of the most violent things I've ever seen. And he told the story of that one. He told the story of another one where the referee, it was a totally clean hit, and the referee threw a flag, and Brantley looked at him and said, "What?" And the referee out loud said, "Well, you hit him too hard." Like, he literally said, "You hit him too hard." And we make fun of that, but you know what? Yeah, don't we? They need to get guys to the ground without hitting them so hard in some cases. And so that's what all these rules are about. And I get that part. It's fine. It really is. Like, if you really love football, if you really truly love football, you want to see it thrive into the future, then you might have to sacrifice a little bit of that here and there, even though it's frustrating. But like I said, from everything I see and know, and this is just me in my little world, if I got the numbers wrong, anybody from Plant High School can contact me. Anybody from the South Tampa Titans can contact me, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. But from talking to people who are on those teams, that's what I heard, and it makes sense because there's no shortage of people who want to get out there and throw the pads on, and that goes through the generations. Like I said, I'd do it. Maybe my son wants to do it one day. If he does, I won't stop him. I'd be pretty happy actually. If he doesn't, that's fine too. And you know what? I'm not going to speak for DeMar Hamlin. I don't know, how he feels or how he will feel. And none of us can obviously even begin to fathom what he's been through. But when he comes out of this, whenever that is, I wonder if he's going to want to play. Whether he can or not is one thing. But if he can, if he even would, I'm genuinely curious to know that. Right now, all that matters is that he's doing better and continues to do better. And just an unbelievable job done by the people there at the stadium. The Bill, I think I didn't have his name. I'm sorry, I should have looked it up. The Bills athletic trainer that gave the CPR. I mean, the types of things they train for all the time happen so rarely, and it would be easy to kind of get lulled into a false sense of security. But when something like that does happen, like boom, they knew exactly what to do and how to do it. And the survival rate for something like what happened to DeMar Hamlin is way higher now than it used to be. Because we know more, and the people that are there on the ground know what actions to take, but you still have to do it. And I can't even imagine. I mean, CPR, I've taken a CPR class like a lot of people probably have, but you never think you're going to do it for real on someone who literally might die, let alone on a field in front of 70,000 people. Like, that's plus not even the 70,000 people, the 22 guys that were on the field that are all standing over your shoulder looking at you. That's got to be unbelievable. Just, man, I can't even imagine. I really can't. But they pulled it off. They got him where he needed to be, and the people at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center there did a great job. And we'll continue to keep an eye on how he's doing. But in the meantime, Week 18 is going to happen. Bucks at the Falcons Sunday. We'll see. We know that they've said, Todd Bowles has said, Tom Brady's going to start. The starters are going to play. I actually like what Todd Bowles said about it because, yeah, I've always been a believer in, I mean, you need to consider the big picture. They should definitely rest guys. You can still start them and rest them. You don't have to play them the whole game. But like he said, he's like, we play 16 other games and we don't worry about anybody getting hurt. And all of a sudden, once we've clinched, every step they take, it's like, oh my God, they might blow out a knee. Like, you know, they've played the other 17 weeks. They'll play. And I know Tom Brady's stance, and he said it in his press conference this week. And he's played every game ever that he's allowed to play. He got the 4-game suspension in 2016 for the whole Deflategate thing, which I know still irks him. And then he missed the, you know, in 2008 when he had the torn ACL and all that and blew out his knee, he missed that season. Other than that, in 23 years, he has not ever not started a game, including other times with the Patriots when they had clinched and he played anyway. And he'll play Sunday. Now, how long will he play? That's up to Todd Bowles. I'll say this much, aside from the whole Brady thing. We have to start looking ahead to what this team is going to look like after Tom Brady leaves, which is probably after the next, you know, few games. Like, right, we got one regular season game, and we'll see how many playoff games. It could be one. I hope it's more, but we don't have much left probably, right? So you've got Kyle Trask, who we've seen in the preseason but has yet to play in a regular season game. And I think a big priority on Sunday, beyond just getting ready for the playoff game, which is the number one priority, has got to be, can we get a look for Kyle Trask? He's number three, remember. He doesn't even dress. He's usually inactive. He's going to be active on Sunday. That much we know. You know, after Brady comes out, whenever that is, then you're still Gabbert. You're going to play Gabbert for a little bit just to say you played him, then go to Trask. I don't know what Bowles' plan is there. But we need to get a look at Kyle Trask in regular condition. And I'm not talking about the preseason and, you know, you take what you can get when you have limited looks. We have those looks. But those are with third-string guys who are not in the NFL right now, third-string offensive linemen, third-string receivers. I want to see him with at least NFL, you know, caliber people, even if it's not our first string, although I'd like to see him with Mike Evans and with Chris Godwin for a little bit too. It's actually kind of a, you know, it reminds me of the Bill Simmons theory. I remember reading this. I don't read much Bill Simmons anymore, but I used to. But I remember he said about these late-season scenarios when they'd play a starter for like a series and then pull him to get him ready for next week. Play him for a series or two, but do it at the end of the game. Like, wouldn't that be more fun and more interesting? Like, put the backups in to start the game, and then if Brady's only going to play two series, like if you've decided Brady's only going to play two series before the game, then make it the fourth quarter. Like, okay, let's see how it goes. Hey, we're down 20-10. You know, that's what we've been doing anyway, and see if they can bring, and then give Kyle Trask a chance with start. I know they're not going to do all this, but this is just a theory. I think it would be fun. But we'll see how much they end up doing. And, you know, the record being 8-8, it's tough because really the game doesn't matter. I know either way it changes nothing about the playoff scenario, but man, 9-8 sounds so much better than 8-9. And you can't put your guys at risk just because something sounds better than something else. But it'd be nice. And the Falcons aren't playing for anything either, so I don't know. Maybe they don't have to worry about the playoffs or anybody getting hurt. But they're running with a rookie QB now. We'll see. It's one of those games where the main thing is to make sure everybody's ready for next week. And besides Brady, who's the main guy everybody wants to talk about, you know, you've got other people I know, like Anthony Nelson, for example. Tryon Shoyinka. Those guys have been playing like every single snap. So those guys probably get a rest on Sunday. Maybe they play a little bit or maybe not at all. You know, there's all kinds of people up and down the offense and defense with varying levels of need for rest or for reps. I mean, reps matter too. So we'll see what they end up doing. And Byron Leftwich said the same thing about wanting to get reps for his guys in his media session this week. He got a little defensive too. You know, the Bucs came out against Carolina. They win the game 30-24. They score 30 points. First of all, for only the second time this year, they get up there and they've been scoring less than 20 points, even in the games they win all the time. So they put up 30 points. They put up 400 and whatever it was, yards of offense, passing, whatever. And, you know, we're not going to sit here. I'm not going to sit here and pretend everything's cool because we saw even on Sunday and been winning and putting up numbers through three quarters for the fifth time in six games, 10 points or fewer through three quarters. And honestly, I mean, they hit the three huge deep balls to Evans. That was the offense. I know they did more than that, but that was what produced the points. They're still not hitting intermediate routes as well. I thought their approach was a little better on Sunday. I thought they gave Brady more time to throw. I was really, really tired of the really, really quick stuff. And that is just, you know, no way to run an offense. They let Brady stay in the pocket for longer and let pass routes develop. They still didn't make a ton of bones on that. And the chunk plays were still missing. So you hit those home runs, and that's great, man. I mean, that was, you know, like I said, three touchdowns. And to see Brady and Evans connecting is hopefully, you know, something that portends well for what's coming up. But it still wasn't the consistent chunk plays moving the ball up and down the field at will. And they didn't really get going to the fourth quarter again. And I'll say this for Byron Leftwich. Imagine being at the level in your field that he's at, okay? He's won a Super Bowl as an offensive coordinator. The thing he's being criticized for right now, he's won a Super Bowl as that thing, let alone all he did in the NFL as a player, all he did in college. And so, and this comes with the territory for any player or coach, but imagine being at that level. I mean, like I always say, he's forgotten more about football in the last hour than I'll ever know. And having all these people who you know don't know a damn thing, including me, criticizing you, you're going to bristle at that. I get that. And we don't. We don't know anything. Like, just know that. Like, we don't know anything. And even if you are a football expert, even the people who are ex-players, the guys on ESPN, even if you're not part of those practices, if you're not in those film sessions, all those things, you don't know. Like, you really don't know what's going on, okay? And that's people who are experts, let alone the general public like you and me. So I can understand why someone like Byron Leftwich would bristle at the constant criticism. And he had some quotes. Here's one. When you really listen to people talk about us, that's emotions talking. He goes on to say, that's not really people that's watching us get better every week. For some reason, everybody wants to throw dirt on the Bucks, but we're not ready for people to throw dirt on us. And so let's just look at some numbers for a minute, okay? I know they won the game Sunday. The Bucks are 25th in the NFL in scoring. That's just a basic, you know, point, so that's not getting deep inside the numbers, but they're 25th in the NFL in scoring. All right, last year, through 16 games, this to me is the most, of all the numbers I'm going to throw at you, this is the most telling. Through 16 games last year with one to go, the Bucks had 56 touchdowns scored offensively. Take a second and guess how many they have this year, okay? They've got 29 touchdowns. That's almost half of what they had last year. 215 fewer points in 2022 than they had in 2021. It's one of the largest drops from one season to another in the history of the NFL in the Super Bowl era, I should say. If they score less than 8 points on Sunday, which I hope they don't, but if they score less than 8 points on Sunday, it'll be the single largest drop in point production from one season to the next ever in the Super Bowl era. And this is a playoff team, okay? And if they score more than 30, then it gets them out of the top 10 most significant drops. But either way, they're much, much worse on third down and in the red zone. And a lot of that you can attribute to Rob Gronkowski not being around, Antonio Brent not being around. I'm not even going to get mad at that part, even though it's important. But more importantly than that, they are number two in the NFL in third downs that they've even had. Like, that's the problem, is they don't stay out of third down. Every damn series, they go all the way to third down. And yeah, you're not going to get the first down when it's third and six, third and seven, third and eight. You're always going to get that. The best offenses aren't even the ones, I say it all the time, the best offenses aren't even the ones that are good on third down. They're the ones that don't even get third downs. They get first downs on other first downs or second downs. They just get chunks and they keep moving. Acquire yards and acquire points efficiently and aggressively. That is how an offense in the NFL succeeds. And that's how a team in the NFL succeeds. And the Bucs don't do that. And like I said before, 10 points or fewer in the first three quarters, five of the last six games. So I'm not as smart as Byron Leftwich football-wise, not even in the same galaxy, okay? But I'm not stupid. I can read numbers. And I know in Byron Leftwich's defense, he was the same offensive coordinator. We haven't changed offensive coordinators. He was offensive coordinator in Super Bowl season. He was offensive coordinator last year, two of the best seasons in franchise history. And now he's the offensive coordinator again, which is why I've been confused. That's why I said last week, I'd really love to talk to Bruce Arians right now and give him truth serum. I really wonder, because I don't think Todd Bowles sits in these meetings and tells him what to do on offense. I don't think Todd Bowles, but there's an overall philosophical trickle-down theory or something going on with the offense. But it still begins and ends, to me, with allowing Brady time to throw, and I don't mean the offensive line allowing Brady time to throw. I mean the coaching staff allowing Brady time to throw, or Brady allowing himself time to throw. Because the super uber quick stuff, you can't do that. You just can't do that. Can't do it. And they last week, I think, did a better job. I thought that was a step forward for the Bucs offense, even though I want to see more of that. And by the way, if you don't follow Ben Baldwin on Twitter, you can follow him. I suggest it. He is one of those guys that does a lot of the inside the numbers stuff. And he posted a graph. He's got tons of charts and graphs. If you're not into that stuff, it might be a little much for you. But pass protection, basically. And this is taking into account several of these rating systems, PFF's grading system, pass rush win rate, all these deep in the weeds analytical stuff. Every single one of them, okay? The Bucs offensive line and pass protection ranks in the top six or seven. Most of it's in the top five in the NFL. And I know, okay, you can play games on paper. You can play them on the field. I know, it's what you see. And like I always say, I'm not Tom Brady standing there with, Grady Jarrett or a Bosa brother or somebody 3 feet away ready to kill me upon the snap. I know that. It's easy to sit in front of a computer. But it hasn't been that bad. Like, it really had. Like, the Bucs could do more. The Bucs could do more. They have underachieved. They are 8-8. They should be so much better. Actually, lucky they're 8-8 with some of the comeback wins they have. And they should be so much better than they are, even though I know they're not as good as they were. I know they lost guys. I know they lost Ali Marpet, Gronkowski, Antonio Brown. I get it, okay? But even with what they have, they should be so much better. So Byron Leftwich, I totally understand why he gets defensive. I probably would, too, in his position, because a bunch of people who don't know what they're talking about are trying to tell him how to do his job. But the numbers don't lie, and that's what the numbers say. So it may not, like I said, once we get in the playoffs, you're not going to remember any of this. Once we start that game against Philly or Dallas next week, whatever it ends up being, by the first series, if we come out moving the ball and score touchdowns, no one's going to care about what their stats were through the 17 regular season games. All that matters is the playoff games. January is always what matters, okay? So, hey, we'll talk more about it on next week's show, but I 100% think the Bucs have a chance in whatever that game ends up being. We'll see. As for this week against the Falcons, like I said, I get it. Take it easy this week. Do what you got to do. And, get the reps to the people that need them. Get the rest to the people that need it. And get nobody hurt. And get out there and get ready for whatever happens. If you want to get a hold of me, you can always email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. It's BOBBYGAMEDAY, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. Same thing on Twitter. You can follow me at bobbygameday. I'm always on there. And in the meantime, also, I want to apologize for the sound quality of this week's show. I guess you probably noticed by now it probably doesn't sound quite the same as most weeks. Although I'll be home by the time you hear this, I am recording this from Vail, Colorado, just using my laptop without the microphone. It doesn't matter where we are, okay? We do what we got to do, especially maybe the offseason or whatever. I'd say, hey, we'll skip the show this week. It's week 18. Bucks just clinched the NFC South. We're getting a show out. And come hell or high water, it may not sound quite as good, but here it is. And like I said, by the time you hear this, I'll be back in town. But recording this remotely this week, and it's been a ton of fun. I can't wait for Sunday. I can't wait to get home and watch some football. I can't wait for the playoff game next week. We'll know more about the schedule and everything after Sunday night, and everything is settled with everything as far as the seeds and things like that. But we know the Bucs will be the fourth seed. And like I said, you get Dallas probably, but if Dallas wins and the Eagles lose, it's kind of a repeat of last year, I guess, the wild card game in which the Bucs trounced Philadelphia. It's amazing what a year difference can make, too, because I remember that playoff game last year against the Eagles and thinking, yeah, these guys, come on, like these guys aren't ready for primetime. Hurts. I was like, this isn't the guy. And this is before the game, thinking that, and then they came in there. The Bucs were up 31-0 at one point, right, and the Eagles scored a few late. And here we are a year later, and the Eagles are most likely the number one seed in the NFC and a force to be reckoned with. But hey, either way, whoever the Bucs end up getting, I don't know who it'll be. I know the Eagles have been without Hurts and things like that. But especially if we get the Cowboys, I mean, they could be really hit or miss. They could be a team that absolutely comes in here and stifles the Bucs, and certainly even lesser teams have stifled the Bucs. But the Bucs have also, remember, I know it doesn't matter now. It was week one, which is ancient history. And I know that Dak got hurt in that game and didn't play most of the game. But the Bucs have a win over the Cowboys already, so it's not like some little engine that could. Oh, can the Bucs do it? They can beat these teams, okay? And they can be better than they've been, independent of whoever the opponent is. But we'll worry about that next week. In the meantime, enjoy the Atlanta game. It's a chance to kind of relax. But still, we only get a few of these games a year, right? We get 17 games a year with an option for more. Out of 365 days in a year, there's only like 20, counting preseason, when the Bucs play a football game. So don't ever throw one of those days away. Those 3 hours are always a big deal. And I'll be watching on Sunday from back home. And, our good friends at Bill. I almost forgot our good friends at Bill Curry Ford before we go. Car, truck, van, brand new, pre-owned, used. It does not matter. They have all of it. And they have more than just Fords, by the way. Check out the website first. Go to BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E, how they spell Curry. BillCurryFord.com. You can see everything there. The completely transparent online pricing is right there. You know what you're getting. No haggle. And then you see what you like. Go to the lot. Go to the showroom a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. Just north of Hillsboro on the east side of the road. Brand the beautiful showroom. They're redoing everything. They've got a little coffee shop and a diner in there. And like I said, you can go check out anything. You can test drive anything. If you want to stay home, though, they will deliver. Like you can call if you see what you like on the website, call them. They'll deliver it to your house just for a test drive, let alone if you buy it. No matter what you get the unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty with the vehicle. As long as you own the vehicle, any engine trouble, bring it back in. You're taken care of. So thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford for taking care of the free stretch. Also, thanks to the Joes, joebucksfan.com, the single best place anywhere on the internet, TV, radio, whatever, for Bucks coverage. It's right here at joebucksfan.com. You can literally refresh it multiple times a day. There's new content up there. Thanks to them for giving me this platform to get in front of all of you. Thanks to all of you for listening. Happy New Year. Our first show of 2023 is in the books. Be safe. Have fun this weekend. Enjoy the Falcons game. And then we'll get down to business next week as we get ready for the wild card game. But until then, email me if you want to, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. Follow me on Twitter @BobbyGameDay. I'll be back next week. Take care of yourselves. Have a great weekend. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks. Want to stay so lonely now.